Thank you. We're joined this week by Maureen Moakley, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Rhode Island, Ted Nisi, Politics Business Editor at WPRI-TV Channel 12, and our special guest is U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse. Thank you all for joining us. Senator, I'd like to start with a question about political representation. Rhode Island got good news this week in terms of how the state will maintain two congressional seats. But states that voted for Donald Trump gained even more seats. And over time, we know that a smaller percentage of Americans will elect more senators, and the Electoral College will be less responsive to the popular vote. As far as Democrats go, what is the response? What is the answer for that?
I don't know that there's an immediate answer. This is something that I think we've really failed to focus on for a long time. In the time that I've been in the Senate has often been controlled by a minority of American voters just because of the population of the different states. The House has been controlled by a minority of American voters because of the red map gerrymandering project back in, I want to say, 2014. And we've had, for the second time, a president elected with a minority of the vote, but propelled into the presidency with a mere minority because of the Electoral College. Unfortunately, the Electoral College is baked into the Constitution, so it's a little hard to change that, and so is the way in which the Senate is apportioned. And I'm sorry to say, we really haven't paid much attention to this as a party. The one thing we did was try to get the Supreme Court to undo partisan bulk gerrymandering, which would have been something very easy for them to do. Every lower court that looked at this was easily able to identify partisan bulk gerrymandering and easily able to create a sensible, forthright solution to the problem. But when it came up to the Supreme Court, they decided this was too complicated and they didn't want any part of it, which I think is a part of the problem we have at the Supreme Court of throwing decisions to the Republican Party over and over and over and over again.
Let me bring things a little bit more into the present. President Biden this week offered his case to the American people in his first address to Congress. He's got a lot of mega proposals for infrastructure and other issues involving an awful lot of spending. Are you concerned that this volume of spending will cause a backlash favoring Republican voters in the midterm elections next year?
We're not seeing that. What we're seeing is very broad support for these programs. The Republicans basically shot their credibility on the, you know, debt and deficit question when they blew $2 trillion in tax relief for almost entirely very well-heeled individuals and big corporations. So they don't really have much standing to complain. And I think what the American people are looking at is, okay, there's the expenditure, but where's it going? And this is going for things that are incredibly important to them and incredibly popular, which is why over and over again, Joe Biden is able to say, look, this is actually a bipartisan bill, even if the Republicans in Congress won't cooperate for their own motives. Because when you test the various measures, they get a lot of support from Republicans around the country, Republican governors, Republican mayors. So I think we're in pretty strong shape. I think the issue is going to be the filibuster and how we work our way around that. And that's going to be a complicated problem to solve.
Let's go to Ted.
Senator Whitehouse, one of the other senators I cover is Senator Markey over in Massachusetts, and he just rolled out a bill that would expand the United States Supreme Court. As far as I know, I haven't seen any Senate Democrats, including you, jump on board with that. And that's interesting to me since you are one of the most vocal critics of the current Supreme Court majority. You know, why at the moment doesn't your strong concern about the way the court is going convert into just proposing adding more seats?
Years as a lawyer, I suppose.
You're scared of them?
I approach this from the notion that if you're going to ask a judge for extraordinary relief in a courtroom, you damn well better have made your case for that judge. And that's why I work so hard on this issue, because I'm really trying to make the case for reforms. But to go into the court and say, here's what I want, and I've not bothered to make my case, that usually doesn't end well. And in this case, I think the public is the equivalent of the court. And we need to do a far stronger job of making our case about what has gone wrong at the Supreme Court. And once we've shown the American people, what has gone wrong at the Supreme Court, then a whole variety of remedies begin to make a whole lot more sense. But you gotta, sometimes you gotta earn it before you win it. And this is one of those times.
Let's go to Maureen.
Senator, you recently wrote a compelling op-ed that noted the tragic aftermath, or as you put it, the unthinkable violence and retribution that occurred when the U.S. withdrew from Vietnam and Laos. And you indicated that there's a good possibility with the Taliban ascendancy that the same kind of unthinkable violence and retribution could happen in Afghanistan, particularly for women.
Yeah.
You noted that we have to be prepared and do something about it. But my question is, what do we do? How do we do it? Is it possible?
Well, you have to have an effective international strategy to put pressure on the Taliban if they start misbehaving in ways that are as violent and vile as the behavior in the aftermaths of our departures from Vietnam and Laos. You have to be ready administratively for a massive exodus of people to whom the United States owes a significant debt to make sure that we've got enough consular staff and administrative capability to process their and their families' efforts to flee because they are particular targets for retribution. And we've got to be ready to deal with the Pakistanis, who are the likely country to which a more general exodus will flow, to make sure that if, like in Thailand after the Laos exodus, you've got to set up very significant refugee camps, you know, have got that all prepared in advance and have an understanding about what we're going to contribute, what they need to do.
Senator Whitehouse, there are a lot of big changes happening with healthcare in Rhode Island. There's the proposed academic health system involving Lifespan Care New England and Brown University. There's uncertainty about the future of the charter care hospitals, Fatima in North Providence and Roger Williams Medical Center in Providence. When you look out a couple of years, will all these changes be good or bad for healthcare consumers in Rhode Island? And if they're more bad, what can be done to mitigate that?
I think it is within our power to make them good. I have supported the merger. I think it's actually essential to create a healthcare system that delivers better care at a lower cost with higher patient satisfaction, the so-called triple aim. I think we can do that. I think working together is the way to do that rather than having battles between Care New England and Lifespan. And frankly, I don't think Care New England and Lifespan can survive on their own. One or both will get picked off by an outside entity, and then we'll have no control over our healthcare destiny. I also think if they can bring in and establish a really good community board so that a great array of stakeholders are represented on the board of the organization, and if they can continue there to expand their focus on delivery system reform towards that triple aim, I think this could be one of the biggest wins in Rhode Island history for healthcare. But those two things have to be accomplished, and I'm going to ride very hard on the institutions to make sure that they do get accomplished. Two good signs. One of the best things going in Rhode Island is Integra, which is the coalition between Rhode Island primary care physicians and Care New England. That's baked in a lot of this reform stuff into the Care New England culture. And the recent merger between Coastal Medical, the big provider service, and Lifespan will bake into the Lifespan culture more of Coastal's innovations. And so there's a really good baseline, I think, for this progress to be continued. Quick closing point on Rhode Island primary care physicians and Coastal. The two of them are stars nationally as what we call accountable care organizations. They have rebooted the way they do their provider work, their healthcare work, and they are among the top two in the entire country in terms of lowering costs and increasing outcomes and increasing patient satisfaction. And they deserve some real credit. Al Kouros and Al Perini, thumbs ups.
My customary disclosure, my wife is an employee of Coastal Medical and now of Lifespan. Back to Ted.
I'd further disclose Ian's wife is a great lady, apart from her employment. Senator Whitehouse, I remember you expressing frustration to Tim White and I on Newsmakers late in the Obama administration about the president's dealings with Congress and getting legislation through. And it was striking to me watching the speech last night, how long the president spent kind of slapping people on the back and chatting with Republicans and Democrats. And he's bringing Republicans over to the White House a lot. And, you know, I know you always talk about the need to have both bipartisan talks and be partisan when necessary. Do you see a difference with Joe Biden as a creature of Congress dealing with Congress?
Totally. First of all, he's thinking way bigger than the Obama administration ever did. Second of all, he's putting way more effort into congressional relationships. And third, he's not anywhere near as thin-skinned and thorny as the Obama administration often was. We've had a cascade of lies out of the previous president. I think he sets Olympic records for lies per minute. To my knowledge, President Biden has only told one lie when he thanked all of Congress for their support for his work, when in fact, a lot of the people in the room had refused to vote for it, but he just overlooked that. And he's on a kind of charm and goodwill and heal the country offensive, which I think is really important. And I thought it was really telling. The most telling thing to me about the speech was that there was no element of vindictiveness or resentment about the relentless Republican opposition to a lot of what he has done. He just gave them credit for it as if they'd been with him all along. And that's a powerful force. And it's something that I really hadn't thought of enough. But watching him do that last night, I thought, wow, that's politically powerful what he did.
Senator, I'd like to ask you about climate change. You have been a long-term advocate of environmental protection and doing something about the climate. I'm thinking of all those speeches that you gave in Congress. Are you optimistic that now we are finally going to come to grips with this and make significant changes leading towards climate change and protecting the environment?
I am. I stopped giving my weekly speeches after Joe Biden was elected, and we had a conversation about that I think has strengthened my resolve that this is the time and that Biden is the administration. On the three Ps, personnel, policies, and passion, he's 3 for 3 on climate. I think with the economy where it is, I'm not surprised that it wasn't a bigger talking point in last night's speech, but it got 2 mentions. And I think they're working very hard to try to make sure that this is the most consequential administration ever on climate. And we've got a group in the Senate that's going to work very hard to make sure that no bill comes through without adequate climate measures at the end of the day. We may break up the infrastructure bill a little bit, so it's not a question of where you put it, but somewhere in there, we're going to make sure is enough climate legislation that we can start getting the job done. And then behind that comes Glasgow, the next Paris Agreement, which is going to be bigger and stronger than Paris ever was. And that gives us a chance to take a second bite legislatively once we have the international agreement in place in Glasgow. So there's a lot of work ahead of us, and we can still screw this up. We're Democrats, we can louse this up, but there is an enormous amount of energy and commitment on it right now. And little by little, corporate America is even starting to show up and put its toe in the political water in Congress and say, we kind of like a good climate bill.
All right, that's all the time we have, so we need to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Maureen.
Thank you.
From WPRI-TV Channel 12, Ted Nesi.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
Thank you to Maureen and Ted and Ian for having me on.
As usual, you can find a lot more on our website at thepublicsradio.org. I'm Ian Donis.